I postulated a substance called Soma, which was a very versatile drug. It would make people feel happy in small doses. It would make them see visions in medium doses. And it...
Back up. Alrighty, so I'm going to be doing these essay collections, or pretty much I'm just going to be vlogging about them because I don't need to rewrite what's already a wealth of information on the best authors there are. I mean, clearly you can tell I'm a literary guy. All those are books I've read. I love reading. It's taken me away from some really dark places that I've been through a life of heroin addiction and being a speed freak, and spent a lot of time in and out of prisons. And you could always read and get the hell out of your headspace. And I'm glad I was intellectually capable enough to do such, or at least taught well enough to do this with my time. But the first one I'm gonna do. And I did do like a George Orwell, I think a Franz Kafka on another channel. But I'm doing this, it's called Dead Letter Society now. And it's this book, Brothers Karamazov, but one specific chapter called The Grand Inquisitor. And I kind of took the name, it was on my mind when I named this podcast channel or a show that I'm gonna be doing. Called Open Inquisition. It was just on my mind at the time. I said, yeah, okay. But that is what an Inquisition is or should be, is looking into something for actual information rather than, that's like the good side of an Inquisition. The bad side is witch hunt, right? Those are two different, methodologies that you could use. Is one is you have your... your victim or the person that you want to persecute, and you just need to find the facts to arrange and, justify whatever you want to do to him or her. On the other side, you've got actual facts, actual, intellectual honesty, and, an actual analysis from a place of centered honesty, as long as it's honest, unlike this Grand Inquisitor, who and the reason why I'm including this is it was very incendiary for this man to write this chapter, and I'm gonna show you why because basically he was accusing the Catholic Church of being a satanic basically anti-Jesus Christ organization, like a insidious demonic organization. But he had to do that if he was going to do that. And even the 1800s in Orthodox Russia, like Tsarist state, you still had to be clever about how you're going to do it, which is why I'm talking about it. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Okay, so the Grand Inquisitor is a chapter, I think it's the first part of the book, of this Brothers Karamazov. And Brothers Karamazov is a gigantic book. It's on the lines of a Moby Dick or a War and Peace, both of which I've read. Sweet. And I've got a copy of War and Peace right there. But... it is a sweeping analysis of these four brothers who are caught up in a murder case where basically one of them killed their father. And in so doing, it opens up a whole bunch of narratives that are like offshoots of this main line right down the middle of this linear path of, one of the brothers killed their father. No spoilers there. And there's the trial. So, and the sweeping, like, grandiose scope of Russian novels is something I know it's not, like, Western literature, per se. It is European, at least it's, you know, I mean, the literary tradition is more European. The first novel ever was actually Don Quixote's, or Don Quixote by Miguel de Cervantes. Like, that's the first modern novel. And, but the Russians did a lot with the innovation of, first of all, character development, but also plot and, man, the just shaping a narrative that just went, goes all types of places. Because one chapter of this book would be like a novella in our modern times, or postmodern times, Jesus. But it starts off, and it's Ivan telling, I think it's Aloysia, or, God, his name always bugs me, because it's a Russian version of, you know, I'll have to look up the pronunciation, but it's Aloysia, but, okay, a little background on Fyodor Dostoevsky. His name was Fyodor Mikhailovich Dostoevsky, and, yeah, he's a Russian novelist, a short story writer, an essayist, and a journalist, although he's most known for his novels, particularly his four great novels that people talk about. That's The Idiot, Crime and Punishment, Brothers Karamazov, and, The Possessed. Those are his four greats, but, I mean, I've read every single thing the man's done, except I haven't finished The Idiot. I probably should. I was dating a woman that used to give me shit like that. I was reading it for a while and just couldn't get into it. I know some people really like it, but it was kind of slow developing compared to his other stuff that had a lot of scandal, a lot of darkness. I mean, this man, his contemporaries, Tolstoy and Turgenev, once again, I'm probably going to mess up these pronunciations. I do speak English and German and quite a bit of Spanish, but I don't speak that much. I don't speak Russian at all. So, but his contemporaries said that he was evil. And they always said he was evil and just a dark, dour person who dealt with this crippling epilepsy. And back then, as in today, modern day Russia is very religious. And that's great and all. It's got like a, you can have a cohesive society, but there's a lot of superstitions that go along with that. You know, so when he's suffering from epilepsy, and what I mean by superstitions is like a unsophisticated explanation of something that's, you know, a natural phenomenon. But people, for the longest time in Russia, they had these people called the old believers. And then they also had these crazy people are basically in the like in the tradition of Rasputin, who basically were paupers that would travel around like monks, almost kind of like the Buddhist idea of a monk, although because Buddhist monks travel and Christian monks kind of stay put, but both have the same idea that basically you don't work for money. You preach and give a message and somebody gives you food if they see fit. And it kind of puts this very earthy, or not earthy, it's like a divine oversight of your pathway through life, which is interesting, you know. But, you know, so people looked at his disability with these old believers and, you know, that very, very... Even today, if you look at the Orthodox Church, like the Eastern or Russian Orthodox Church, it's got a lot of Catholicism parallels in it. And this is why he probably pointed this out in the Catholic faith rather than the Orthodox faith. I don't think, and plus, the story that he's telling in the Brothers Karamazov is just, it's a story within a story. So it's a character talking about a story that they had wrote themselves. And it's about an inquisitor who basically has Jesus come in front of him. That's the some of it, but we're going to get into more than that. But yeah, Dostoevsky was born in 1821, and he died in 1881, so he's 60 years old, and like I said, he has those four great ones: The Crime and Punishment, Idiot, Demons or the Possessed, The Brothers Karamazov, and that's just a translation thing, the demons thing. It's, but, hold on. Anyway, so yeah, he, yeah. So, one of the most, his greatest sources of my own connection with Dostoevsky is he's a convict, and he's also a crazy fuck who dealt with lots of mental illnesses and stuff like that. And honestly, he had epilepsy, but it's thought that he might have had more going on than that, or had been kind of like psychologically or perhaps even neurologically damaged by the condition. But in this particular story about Dostoevsky, the mock execution, is one of the most interesting parts of about Dostoevsky, that he, okay, so let's, I'm going to read here from, actually it's just Wikipedia right here, but his mother died in 1837 when he was 15, and around the same time he left school to enter the Nikolaev Military Engineering Institute. After graduating, he worked as an engineer, and briefly enjoyed a lavish lifestyle, translating books to earn extra money. In the mid-1840s, he wrote his first novel, Poor Folk, which gained him entry into St. Petersburg literary circles. Arrested in 1849 for belonging to a literary group that discussed banned books critical of Tsarist Russia, he was sentenced to death, but the sentence was commuted at the last moment. He was part of a socialist group. That was what he was. This is on Wikipedia, and I got it literally right here that he was in a socialist group, and it says, okay, on this, this was followed by short stories and novel, The Double, while at work on Nikochka Nesvanova. The 27-year-old author was arrested for belonging to a young socialist group. Yeah, Wikipedia is a little bogus, but anyway, so, here, sorry. Arrested in 1849, he wrote the first novel. He was sentenced to death, but the sentence was commuted at the last moment. So he had this mock execution, and literally, I think there was like 12 people in this group of students that are in a socialist group. And it's funny that they would not want that on Wikipedia, that he's a socialist. It stands with everything we know about Wikipedia, a bunch of commies. It wasn't that everybody got just the mock execution. I think they killed four, and eight of them walked away. And back then, the exile system worked kind of like, so you went to serve in a Siberian prison, but, really, the whole purpose of this prison and many prisons over human history was colonization, or to hold down the flag in an area that nobody would actually go. That's why Siberia was full of these prison camps, was because they couldn't get people to go live out on the tundra or the steppe or whatever, the permafrost of the Siberian wilderness, except if they were forced. And this is certainly what happened to Dostoevsky, but what it was, and it says here, although, you know, that part about the, they just omitted the socialist part, it's a little sketchy, but he had to do basically like 10 years of exile, and after, I think it was six, yeah, he spent 4 years in a Siberian prison camp, followed by 6 years of compulsory military service in exile. He ended up getting out of military, doing the military service, but he was let out before that ever became he didn't have to serve the full time, and he was able to return to St. Petersburg, and I believe somewhere in the early 1850s, but that's his first really big book, because he wrote that Poor Folks book, but his first really big book was Houses of the Dead, and it was about prison in Siberia, and it actually has a lot. I'll have to do a video on that too, but it actually is exactly like prison is today. It's funny, the more things change, the more they stay the same, because even the way, like, some of the mannerisms of prison, as far as, like, how you act if you're in the hole, or how you treat the guards, or how snitches are handled, or homosexuality, contraband, all this stuff that will always be a phenomenon in prison, it's all in there. It's exactly the same, like, 200 years ago. It's kind of funny how things change, but the more they stay the same, that whole thing, it really is. And with Dostoevsky, this book, the one that I'm talking about, or the chapter in this book called The Grand Inquisitor, it was his last book, and it was published posthumously, and it's, like, roundly accepted as one of the greats of fiction in any language. And I'll just read a little bit of the passage or the chapter and kind of get you, and then kind of do a little synopsis of it and then wrap it up, and hey, you'll have a good little primer and you should go read Brothers Karamazov. All right, so I just realized it's Aloysius. That's what it is in English. Aloysia. So it's this chapter starts off with Ivan telling Aloysia of his story that he wrote, and it's called The Grand Inquisitor. Even this must have a preface. This is Ivan talking. It says that right there. That is a literary preface, laughed Ivan, and I am a poor hand at such things. You see, my story takes place in the 16th century. At that time, as you probably learned at school, it was customary in poetry to bring down heavenly powers on earth. Dante was not the only one to do this. In France, clerks as well as monks in monasteries used to give regular performances in which the Madonna, the saints, the angels, Christ, and God himself were brought on the stage.
Yeah, these are mystery plays. Yeah, I didn't. I looked this up. I'm editing right now, and so that's what this picture is in front of you. That's what a mystery play looked like.
Kind of comedic. What he's talking about are these tragedy plays that they did in the Middle Ages that were like really kind of poor productions. I actually have a volume of these things, but what they would have is a bunch of like characters that would be named like Virtue or Vice, or the characters were meant to be demonstrative of some like a character or character trait or something in the Bible. And this originally was meant to basically teach people the Bible who are illiterate. That's what they're called. Mystery plays is another word for them. So in those days, it was done in all simplicity. In Victor Hugo's Notre Dame de Paris, an edifying and gratuitous spectacle was provided for the people in the Hotel de Ville of Paris in the reign of Louis XI in honor of the birth of the Dauphine. Dauphine means it's like the Prince of Wales, it's the heir to the throne of France. It was called the Good Judgment of the Very Saintly and Gracious Virgin Mary. And she appears herself on the stage and pronounces her good judgment. Similar plays based on the Old Testament were occasionally performed in Moscow too, up to the time of Peter the Great. The Old Testament is notoriously violent and crazy. So he was saying, in Europe, they used to do these plays about, Mother Mary. We used to do the Old Testament. So he's like, he's kind of making fun of Russia a little backwards. But besides plays, there were all sorts of legends and ballads scattered about the world in which the saints and angels and all the powers of heaven took part in when required. In our monasteries, The monks busied themselves in translating, copying, and even composing such poems, even under the Tartars. Those are the Mongols, the Golden Horde that literally raped and pillaged Russia for a couple hundred years. It might have been 100 years, but they used to make the Muscovite princes feed their horses grain in order to be a prince, to pay fealty and also a lot of gold to the Mongols, you know, basically debasing them. And there is, for instance, one such poem, of course, from the Greek, The Wanderings of Our Ladies Through Hell, with descriptions as bold as Dante's. Our Lady visits hell, and the Archangel Michael leads her through the torments. She sees the sinners and their punishment. There she sees, among others, a set of sinners in a burning lake. Some of them sink to the bottom of the lake so they can't swim out. And these God forgets, an expression of extraordinary depth and force. And so Our Lady, shocked and weeping, falls before the throne of God and begs for mercy for all in hell, for all she has seen there, and indiscriminately. So he's begging for all the sinners in hell. Kind of like an abolitionist today.
But did you see how many people are mentally ill that are in prison right now?
No, I know, but the act that you says release everyone in 10 years.
But think about it. Who will release
you? But they were like human traffickers.
Oh, I know.
Child sex. So, but you're saying, do you mean that you don't actually support that?
Abolitionist.
No.
Indiscriminately, right? Just, you know, the murderers and the, you know, people lied on their taxes. All of them. All of them shouldn't be there. She begs him. She will not stop. And when God points to the hands and feet of her son, nailed to the cross, and asks, how can I forgive its tormentors? She bids all the saints, all the martyrs, all the angels and archangels to fall down with her and pray for mercy for all without discrimination. It ends by her winning from God a respite of suffering every year from Good Friday till Trinity Day. And the sinners at once raise a cry of thankfulness from hell, chanting,
Thou art just, O Lord, in his judgment. Thou art just, O Lord, in his judgment. Right, so this is the original story that he's basing his story off of. This story,
Lord, in his judgment. So it says, he goes on and he starts to actually describe his story that he wrote. This is Ivan telling his brother Aloysia, my story is laid in Spain, in Seville, in the most terrible time of the Inquisition, when fires were lighted every day to the glory of God, and in the splendid act of faith, the wicked heretics were burnt. Oh, of course, this is not the coming in which he will appear according to his promise at the end of time in all his heavenly glory, and which will be sudden as lightning flashing from east to west. No, he visited his children only for a moment. And there were the flames were crackling around the heretics. In his infinite mercy, he came among men in that human shape in which he walked among men for 3 years, 15 centuries ago, from the time of the Inquisition. So this was, he came down to the hot pavement of the southern town in which on the day before almost 100 heretics had, for the greater glory of God, this is all kind of humorous the way he's describing this, been burned by the cardinal, the grand inquisitor, in a magnificent act of faith. And that was literally what the punishment was called, was auto de fe was what it was called in Latin, auto de fe. They had been burned in the presence of the king, the court, the knights, the cardinals, the most charming ladies of the court, and the whole population of Seville. So you have Jesus comes down, or God, basically, the Son of God, and Jesus comes down and visits Seville just as they burn these people. And the Grand Inquisitor, this old, like, wizened man, comes up and sees this guy, who at the time he's like doing like magic tricks, basically. Jesus is like doing magic tricks, and he sees this guy who's like causing some people joy. This is the Grand Inquisitor, And he walked up to him and said, "Is it thou? Thou?" But receiving no answer, he adds once again, "Don't answer. Be silent. What can thou say indeed? I knew too well what thou would say, and thou hast no right to add anything to what thou had said of old. Why then art thou come to hinder us? For thou hast come to hinder us, and thou knowest that. But dost thou know what will be tomorrow? I know not who thou art, and came not to know whether it is thou or only a semblance of him." So he sees Jesus, the Grand Inquisitor, and basically says, "Hey, you can't preach on top of your past preaching," which is what the heretical teachers were doing, which is basically just adding on to what Jesus had said. Now, is it good to keep tradition alive and keep the teachings of the Bible if you're a Christian? Is that good? Yeah, I guess it would be. Catholic faith, mind you, at the big split, or the, not the schism, because it's another period of history, but the Reformation was literally about language. It was a German priest who said, "Hold on, can't we just not print these books in Latin? Can't they be done in the lingua franca of the, you know, the area, which would be German in that instance?" Martin Luther was a German. And that was seen as heretical to actually allow people. And remember the whole thing, he opens up on the mystery play that was like, Mary going down to hell with Archangel Michael. And this is Jesus confronting the Grand Inquisitor. And the Grand Inquisitor drags him in, Jesus that is, in front of his court and begins to interrogate him. And completely tears apart not only Jesus's three acts of temptation by the devil, but, and he doesn't really tear those apart. What I mean by it, he questions everything as far as, because remember the three temptations, and I'm not Christian, but I've read the Bible front to back. That's what going to the shoe in prison will do for you. You'll have time to read the Bible front to back. But the first temptation is, he says, you can get manna from heaven. If you just ask God, he'll, bring down bread. And, Jesus doesn't do that. He declines the first temptation. And then he says, "Hey, if you're the Son of God, go ahead and throw yourself off that cliff. If you're the Son of God, God will surely stop you from hitting the ground." So questioning God's plan, right? Begging or expecting providence, right? Or some special treatment or whatever for your faith, the manna and from the sky. The second is questioning God's plan. And the third is the whole kingdom in all the land, right? And that's what Satan tempts Jesus with. He says, if you look out over there, and I guess on a cliff at the time, and I forget, it actually says where he's supposedly at. He just says he's kind of in the wilderness, his 40 days in the wilderness. But Jesus declines, of course. And this is part of like the fundamental teachings of Christianity, that of how to approach the Word of God and the teachings of Jesus Christ, that you wouldn't test his plan, you wouldn't want for material goods over the kingdom, and like the kingdom in heaven is above the kingdom on earth, and expecting like relief from your worldly woes, kind of like the book of Job, right? That you take what happens to you in this life, it will happen to all of us in this life, that we're going to grow old and die, or just die tragically and get hit by a bus, who knows? But, and the Grand Inquisitor, mind you, this whole time, the character that is Jesus never speaks the whole time. It's just the Grand Inquisitor talking about, basically just ridiculing and trying to tempt Jesus in this time. And the reason why I started with this is his arguments for why, you know, he'll say, well, if you could, what the Grand Inquisitor tells him, he says, if you could produce manna from heaven, if you could produce bread, we could like corner the market and these people would follow us around forever. And they would, but we rob them of their free will. And he's talking about this. Hey, if you do basically a parlor trick for people, people will, you know, obviously come and follow you and be very superstitious and all that, and about what you're doing. And then he says the same thing about, you know, flinging yourself off a mountain. He kind of questions him on this line, like, you know, and actually tempts Jesus again as the Grand Inquisitor to Jesus, because mind you, this, if this questioning doesn't go well, he's going to execute him, that's, or burn him at the stake. That would be the idea. And it's never specifically implied or said until the end that the Grand Inquisitor is actually the place of the devil. But what it is said, or like, I guess really, it can only be inferred what Dostoevsky's meaning. It's really, it's said without saying, that the Catholic Church or the Vatican violates all three of those temptations. Manna from heaven, in that, and remember he says, if you just did this, that parlor trick for everybody, everyone would follow you around. What do Catholic ministries do? Charity. And what is it supposedly really a, you know, an, what is it exhibiting? It's actually that kind of like a flex. It's a power move. You need help. I can help you. That's what the Grand Inquisitor is saying. Like, why don't you just do what we do? That's what he's saying. And then when he's talking about fleeing yourself off a mountain, I forget exactly what his temptation on that is, but that, you know, basically, I forget exactly what he said, but the kingdom, that's the specific one, is the Vatican, if they were to listen to the teaching of Jesus, would never have the Vatican. They would never have had a kingdom. And it really just shows, it's, to write this back then would took some stones, but at the end, the way he kind of just shrugs it off, he says, oh, it means nothing. He's just the story's told by Ivan, one of the brothers in the Brothers Karamazov, titular or whatever, brothers. But he says that, oh, it just matters, it doesn't mean anything, it's just a story, is what he tells his brother. And that it's just a story, it doesn't mean anything. But he does basically say, hey, the brother Aloysia kind of questions about it. He's like, so the Inquisitor is supposed to be evil, or the Inquisitor's, you know, he basically figures out what his brother's hinting at. He says, oh, no, it's just a story. And that's where the chapter ends. It's like a 20-page chapter. But it's one of these, like, the reason why I'm including this is because it was something that, you know, this, it's not part of the narrative. It's not part of a linear narrative. This was a story that Dostoevsky wanted to insert, and it took a lot of clever creativity to figure out a way. He was thinking, well, yeah, I'm sure in his mind he's sitting there thinking, wow, the Catholic Church is so corrupt, they are literally doing everything that Jesus said not to do. I want to say that, but I can't say that. Now, first of all, the Orthodox Church would be pissed off about it, because they're kind of like one and the same, and he's really making a comment more about the Orthodox Church than he is about the Catholic Church, just because he's Russian. And it would be, he was already, mind you, at a point that he'd been exiled. He was bankrupted because of his gambling debts. Dostoevsky lived a very, he also had a couple wives. I mean, he had a very, not a couple wives at the same time, but he had a wife that died and you know, he remarried. But the woman he remarried was like 40 years younger than him. which wasn't uncommon back then because you'd have a ton of money and you'd basically die and the woman would have your name, the money, and the child to, you know, carry on. So if you lived into your 50s, and men can, you know, procreate a little later on in life, whereas women, especially back then, if you had a child at, you know, 40 years old, you might not make it. I mean, your hips might not, yeah, it's not meant, you're supposed to have your children, especially as women, younger in life for a reason. So, but yeah, this is a very interesting, this is just supposed to be a little bit of an overview about it. But that is something that I wanted to just pass along, is that it required a lot of creativity and a lot of cleverness and a lot of balls all the same. One writer I'm going to talk about a lot, and he's basically like, I mean, one of the fundamental writers in how I, you know, do my own style and my own set. I'm like a satiric writer for a lot of my stuff is like comedy. It has some comedic hint to it, or flavor to it. And it's Voltaire is the other, one of the writers that I always reference. And he had this saying that we must crush the vile thing. And he was talking about the Inquisition at the time, the evil superstition of the Catholic Church that saw any progress that they didn't understand as evil. And that's something to be said a lot for our current time when we're dealing with censorship and all these many like manifold issues that are basically people trying to reshape society and people trying to hold together the old beliefs. If you're of whatever camp, this, you know, let's be progressive. I have my own, I'm not going to say the word that I, you know, if you watch my other videos, you'll know the word I have for it. And then the conservative, I'm just going to say that's what it is. But beyond any political motive, about science, about, you know, is that, like climate change, for instance, right now, is that there's, and like COVID, remember the lockdowns and everything like that? People will fight you tooth and nail over shitty science, over shitty belief, because it's all that they have left in those base three drives. Remember, it's like, you're questioning God's plan, which is just like positivism. It's just like, well, if it could be changed, it should be changed, right? I want a sex change because I, you know, felt vulnerable this morning. And, you know, I always like, you know, dressing in women's clothing in private. Just whack off my wiener. Does that do anything for you? You're just mutilating your genitals at a certain point. So, and that's just, and then the kingdom of God, or the, is that people will build whole empires out of bullshit and out of a big contradiction. And to know what that is, it's evil. And even the people who are most screeching on high about their complete, you know, like lily white, wonderful, perfect, you know, objectives and the things that they want are pure of heart, right? No. We're all that Grand Inquisitor in one turn, and we're all the man he's talking to in one turn. We all have, there's the duality of man, which is basically we have good and bad within us. And I've always felt like you're looking at you know, myriad, millions, billions, even maybe trillions of human beings, or trillion, maybe a trillion human beings over all of human history. And all of them are basically echoes of one another. Like we're all, like, it's kind of like a reincarnation. And when I'm looking at you in the eye, you're looking at me in the eye. And there's, we hear so much about, like, racial essentialism for today. My perspective is unique, right? That's not really true. Human beings, there's something always universal that you'll understand. Like, watch somebody, doesn't matter what color they are, where they grew up, whatever it is. Watch them with their children. Watch them when they, you know, they're watching their mother die, or they're cuddling up with their dogs, or whatever, you know, everyone has the same sensations inside, and we're all human, and we're all the good and the bad. So, and that's, you know, my Buddhist mumbo jumbo, but I hope that y'all will go out and read, at least get the audiobook. That's what I'd do if I were, you know, trying to read this. I was sitting in prison, so I obviously was a captive audience. But anyway, that's Brothers Karamazov, The Grand Inquisitor, and I hope y'all go and read it. So, all right, till next time, and I'll be doing, I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to do the analysis on all the different books and all the different stuff. Could be different, could just be reading a synopsis. I might read a passage, I don't know, you know, we'll just play it by ear. But all this is available on Substack. It's available wherever you get your videos, podcasts, all that good stuff. It's Big Brother Holding Company or Big Brother HC on all the, or on Twitter and Getter for right now. But I also have a Gab account that's Big Brother Holding Company. So, all right, peace out. Talk to y'all soon.
I am the criminal. It's time to tell you that Big Brother has betrayed you into fighting a war against Eurasia that you can never hope to win.
Force which in general terms can be called overpopulation, the mounting pressure of population pressing upon existing resources. This, of course, is an extraordinary thing. Something is happening which has never happened in the world's history before.